to the Delling Pod with me, James Delling Pod. And I know I always say I'm excited about this week's special guest, but it's not a special guest. It's Dick. Hello, Dick.
Hello, I'm back. It's me. I've been called out of the pub, out of the very pub, to do a podcast. How is that? How about dedication?
Out of the mouths of very pubs and sucklings. Well, I have been... I have sacrificed an evening watching some crap, some girl crap on TV that the girl's choosing. So you can imagine how gutted I am.
Hardly a sacrifice, but it's been such a lovely day. I started it with a very pleasant walk on British Camp with some friends, including Barry the Geomancer, who now lives in the wilds of South Wales, and he's always entertaining. And then when you first contacted me, I was eating chocolate, orange and beetroot cake in Ledbury, which was very fine. That's indeed. Good. And then when you contacted me for the second time, I was in my local pub, the Bull Baiters, having a pint of ale. So, yeah, it's been a perfect day.
That sounds very
a lovely
day.
Way to end it.
I couldn't have done many of those things because, do you know, I'm on a gluten-free diet at the moment.
Oh my God, what's that in aid of?
Well, so what it is that Fawn was told that by her chiropractor that if she avoided wheat and stuff, then it would it would be good for her arthritis, which is plaguing her. And I thought, well, there must be easier ways than giving up stuff. But actually, it's had a transformative effect on her. You know, we haven't been eating. It's really worked for her. And I thought I would do it, not really because I wanted to give up bread and stuff, but I wanted to kind of do semi-keto through the back door. And I thought, I'm never going to be, you know, if I announced I'm going to go on an all meat diet or I'm going to go keto, it would be divorce time. You know, it'd be like, don't be ridiculous. Do you realize how inconvenient this is going to be? But here I am sort of traveling on the coattails of wife's dietary perversion. And I can, you know, it's sort of like, I mean, it's not keto, obviously, and all the keto goes, no, if you were going to do keto, you've got to do this and that. Yeah, I know. But actually, it stops you eating. You can't eat cake, pretty much. Sugar's terrible for me anyway. Did you hear the Clive DeCarl podcast?
With you?
Yeah.
No, I'm way behind. I'm still playing catch up. I always am. Man.
Yeah, you'll love Clive DeCarl. He's got a lovely voice and a lovely manner. And he's kind of, I think he's done his fair share of psychotropics, which is always a good thing. He's cool. Anyway, he said to me that sugar is a neurotoxin. He didn't mince his words.
Right.
I mean, sugar does mess you up. It's like, you think about the origins of sugar. You think about, I mean, it's a bit like tobacco, wasn't it? It's a product designed to make you addicted in order to generate profits for the people who having sugar canes in the Indies, in the West Indies, and slave trade and all that.
There's days when someone's brought in cake at work, or they've just brought a load of sweeties back from Texas, which is what happened recently. And you can't help just gorging on these things. And I come back and I'm at home and I'm thinking, I feel shaky and dizzy and really quite ill. And it's all back down to the sugar. So I completely get it. I reckon it's one of those in moderation things, but you don't often notice it when you overdo it, especially getting older.
When I've had a sugary thing sometimes, I can almost feel the evil lime spirochetes going, we love it. We love it. We're going to fuck you up. We're going to take over your body.
That's a very good Gollum impersonation.
No, it was a spirochete. It was a lime spirochete.
Right, okay.
And they're nasty bugs that just kind of really mess you up. And they do. And I find what ought to be the perfect combination, cake and coffee. It's just, I feel awful in that way that you said. Much better having a cigarette and coffee than a cake and coffee in terms of.
Isn't it funny how many people have turned to the evil weed for their recreational kicks? Because the amount of libertarian types I now notice sneaking out of the pub for a crafty roll up, nothing more than that. But it's sort of like it's enjoying a little bit of a renaissance,
isn't it? Well, I do it as a partly because I don't believe in cancer anymore. I mean, obviously, I do believe that people die of cancer, but I think that the causes of cancer are, well, maybe cigarettes do cause it. But what I mean is that I don't, after listening to the Clive DeCarle podcast, which you must listen to, and not just him, it's a few other sort of podcasts I've listened to or talked to, particularly, actually, Clive DeCarle did a very good podcast with G. Edward Griffin, who's pretty much the godfather of all. You can't even call him a conspiracy theorist because he's so genial and not sort of tinfoil hattish, and so his stuff is well researched. But he did this podcast with Clive DeCarle. They talked about cancer, and they made the point that everyone thinks, or all normies think, that cancer is one of those things that if you're unlucky, you're going to get it. So you think, I hope I don't get cancer because that would be really unlucky. Mm-hmm. It's not that. It's all to do with diet and lifestyle. And actually, I mean, I'm sure fags are not good for you. But the Western diet, the diet that's been imposed on us by the food industry, by Kellogg, by Seventh-day Adventists, by generations of cabal poisoners, it's partly designed to give you cancer and help finish us off, and it's doing it very effectively.
Well, one of the conversations I had on the walk today with my good friend Ant was about the evil of so-called vegetable oil in cooking, and sunflower oil, and the fact that you're not supposed to get oil out of seeds, and the processing that goes on is phenomenal. And it's just one of those things that's in all our cupboards that we reach for with every single meal, and it's killing us.
It is. Funny you mentioned that. So the other night, I went to Waitrose. And the form was out for some reason. So it was dinner, home alone. And obviously I put aside a steak to have. It's like steak is good.
As you do.
With a salad. And I was looking at the shelves and I thought, are there any treats I could buy myself that wife doesn't like and I quite like? And my eye alighted on tarama salata, which is not necessarily my favourite thing, but I used to eat it at university and stuff in pita bread.
Just like a student does.
Yeah, just like a student does. And I thought, I know, I'll recreate that. Do they not? They do, don't they?
No, not really. No. I don't think it's a student food.
No, I see. Okay. Do you know what I used to eat?
Undergraduates, maybe.
Do you know what I used to eat every day?
Chicken in pita bread with lettuce and mayonnaise.
Oh, you remember?
That's what you fed when I visited you in Oxford.
Yeah.
It was your standard,
except
it was your staple.
When I didn't have chicken, what did I put in?
Tuna?
No, prawns. No? Prawns.
Prawns. I don't know.
Do you not remember prawns? Okay, anyway. So tarama salata to try and recapture my gilded youth. So I had this tarama salata, and actually there's a story here. I'd done my shop and I checked underneath the bags and I realized that I hadn't actually paid for the tarama salata. And I thought, should I go back into the store? Should I not? What would God think? God obviously wants me to go back into the store, but I want to get home. So I drove home with this thing, and the tarama salata was really disgusting. It was watery, and it was like God was punishing me for yeah. But
clearly. More than that,
I then looked at the list of ingredients, and guess what the number one ingredient in their tarama salata was?
Sunflower oil.
No, even worse.
Strychnine.
Very close. Closer. Rapeseed oil.
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine the stuff that gives you terrible hay fever? The stuff that's just like, why is it there?
The product's so good, they called it rape.
So they called it rape. And...
What should we call this stuff? How about rape?
But
rape's a great name.
Do you know what's really sad? Today, I was eating a different Waitrose hummus. And you can tell I'm on a I'm desperate for stuff that sort of makes up for the lack of storage that I'm
any joy at all in my this diet. Yeah, exactly.
So I thought I'd experiment with the Moroccan hummus. So I tried it, and it's got bits in it, you know, in flavour. It's not like a bog standard hummus. I thought, oh, this is nice. I looked at the label. Guess what the main ingredient is? Well, apart from rapeseed oil. Yeah, rapeseed oil. And I'm thinking, hang on a second. When did this happen? When did rapeseed oil go in everything? I mean, everything that palm seed oil isn't in, for example.
Mm.
It's actually. When you understand how evil seed oils are, it becomes rather sinister, I think.
Well, it all comes back round to they hate us and they want to kill us. And everyone who realizes this, everything falls into place. The government hate us and they want to kill us. The food makers, they hate us and they want to kill us.
Yeah.
Life is much easier when you accept that.
It's much easier.
This is one little message that you need to understand to wake the hell up. It is that one.
It not only is it easier, it's also much more comprehensible. Nobody has ever come up with a grand overarching theory of everything that explains stuff in quite the same way as the world is controlled by a tiny, tiny elite that hates you and wants to kill you. And they're like cats. They don't just want to eat you. They want to play with you first. Yeah. So you can run around like a mouse going, and they love it.
They want to see your fear and they want to feed off that fear.
Well, they do. They want to make you feel you're trapped. Underage child, and they want to harvest your adrenochrome. But simple things like, or less upsetting things like 20-mile hour zones in cities. No, nobody wants that. No normal person wants 20-mile hour zone. Apart from actually a few cucked Londoners. I mean, I've got various London friends who say, oh, yeah, we quite like it, actually. Oh, yeah, no, we don't have a car anymore. We've got one of those cars. And there are these cars that you can hire for like 10 minutes or half a day.
That sort of carpooling type.
Carpooling and stuff. And these are the kind of people who are building their own concentration camp building their own prison camp to use Catherine Austin Fitz's phrase. So many people, even now, even after all we've been through in the last 2 years, are participating in the cabal's project to steal our freedoms. Instead of going, hang on a second, I quite like driving 30 miles an hour down the road, and even that was too slow. Instead, they're going, yes, punish us some more, Klaus. Yes, Rothschilds and Rockefellers, take away more of our freedoms because we are useless cattle eaters.
But look, they're letting us choose the wallpaper for our prison cell from this lovely catalogue, and it's got some super patterns in it. Basically it, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
So we haven't podcasted for quite a long time, as always happens, but we've got some big events that we've both done that we can talk about and should talk about. The first one being your fantastic do with Majid Nawaz. We haven't spoken since we did that, really.
No.
We've got my visit to the Irreverend Live podcast.
Yes. Event.
It wasn't even a podcast because they cunningly decided that they weren't going to record it. And I thought, oh, it's a bit of a mistake missing out on all of that. But
no. Those
guys are up against it. They can't speak openly. But so to be at an event that was deliberately not recorded and everyone there was speaking freely, it's got a lot to recommend it. Because they've got a lot to lose. They could lose their jobs over the sort of opinions that they hold, you know, like believing
like
in God and
not John Calvin.
Yeah, well, Calvin was one of the guests, Calvin Robinson. He was one of the other guests. I met him very tall, and obviously lovely chap. I know you know him anyway, but yeah, he was there. He went down very well because he's caught the whole zeitgeist of what's going on in the church today. The fact that these old middle-aged white bishops are telling a young black man that he doesn't understand racism. Yes. It's absolutely hilarious.
It's great. It's great. And it's beyond parody, and it confirms
it really is.
Everything that we know to be true about the Church of England, the hierarchy, the establishment. I mean, not the, you get individual vicars like Reverend Jamie Franklin, but it's a bit like priests doing the Latin Mass in the Catholic Church. They're good people, but they're working within an organization which is satanic, and it obviously is satanic. I mean,
we had a conversation with Thursday Circle that we, you know, my new venture, that we had our meeting last Thursday, 2 days ago in Worcester, the 12 of us, one of whom is a Church of England vicar. And we opened the conversation with the topic, the Church of England, is it worth saving? Now, of course, the vicar tried to put a case for there is some good in it. There are bits that are worth saving. But the rest of us were sort of like, yeah, but really, how many bits to justify trying to save it? It needs completely taking down and building up from the ground up. And that is the only way it happens, from the ground up.
When you said there were 12 of us and one of us, I thought you were going to say, and one of us betrayed us.
It very much had that feeling, because it took place in a room above an inn, and it's happened one or two times that we've had 12 of us there, and we look around and we're sort of like grinning at each other because it's just all too much. But it was very, very good. But yes, there was it feels at times nothing less than reinventing the church from the ground up, what we're doing. So
yes,
I have great hopes for Thursday Circle, but the discussion was lively, and everyone there learned a heck of a lot. There was a few of us there who know a heck of a lot about the Bible. It wasn't the only thing we discussed, but of course those within the C of E see it as worth saving, but the fact that they wouldn't even accept Calvin into their ranks, and he had to go off and join GAFCON, an Orthodox offshoot of the church, you know, there is no room for him in the C of E.
I mean, tell me more about GAFCON.
It's a kind of umbrella organization for kind of Orthodox Anglicanism, and it's big in Africa.
Oh, yeah.
Because the African churches, there's no nonsense there, no LGBT sort of gay marriage,
definitely not
type stuff,
none of that.
And the irony is that the Church of England want more black priests, but if they get any from Africa, they get the wrong kind of black priest. They get conservative black
who believe in God, which is really embarrassing.
Believe in God and don't believe in women priests and gay marriage. And so it's sort of like they don't know where to look. But GAFCON is a conference of sorts, but it's expanding. And I can only see it getting bigger. If they're driving good people like Calvin into their ranks, then they're only going to get bigger.
I told you, didn't I, about the best church service I've ever went to. I'm sure
no,
I did.
I don't know you did.
Oh, I right. I did. So we were
in your travels, in your gap yard.
Yeah, in the middle of nowhere. It was either in, I think it was in Zaire. I'm pretty sure it was in Zaire. It was sort of quite remote and jungly. And it happened to be Easter Sunday, and mm-hmm. we went. It was a good idea. I don't know whose idea it was. We saw that they were staging a church service in this kind of wooden jerry-built church, and it was in It might even have been in Central African Republic, actually, because it was in an area where there was a tradition of animism, which is their local version of voodoo. And so there was a sort of weird mix of Christianity and voodoo. Anyway, during the service, the priest who was conducting the service suddenly dropped dead. We thought he had died for a moment. And then he was carried out and I think brought back in a coffin or something. And then he rose from the dead.
Quite a neat trick.
I forget the exact details, but it was very, very weird. It was a mixture of kind of voodoo and Christianity, but it certainly brought home the resurrection.
A little bit of live and let die about it.
It was very live and let die. It was good.
Yeah, we need a little bit more of that over here. I can't see the St. John's Church doing it. Now, the wife is working tomorrow. And as we were walking to the pub just now, and our path took us right past my local church, and I idly eyed up the what time is the service tomorrow, because I'm very critical of churches and their Sunday services, but I really feel I should go to my local one on a bog standard Sunday just to be able to speak with authority on just how bad it is. Mm-hmm. What I'm anticipating is masks, hand sanitizer, social distancing still, sermons about Black Lives Matter, Ukraine, SJW issues, that sort of thing, and no wine with the Holy Communion.
Yeah.
Now, this is obviously an Anglican church, so it's sort of going to be slightly different to what our Catholic friends would have, but that's the sort of thing I'm anticipating. And I'm prepared to be surprised, but it does mean I've got to find another time to walk the dog. So I've got a choice between dog or God tomorrow.
So I've just been entertaining two Australian friends.
Yes, tell me about the Australians.
It was really good. It was lovely.
I knew it would be good. It's such a lovely thing that fans contacting you out of the blue.
They were sort of fans, but they were also actually friends, because one of them had been before, Bella.
Okay.
Bella Debrera works for the IPA, which is an Australian think tank, on our side of the argument.
Not Indian Pale Ale.
That as well.
Right.
And she came over with Fredo. Fredo is, of course,
it's they
Fredo,
all have it? To have an O.
Fredo's her husband. She made him
Fredo.
She'd come 3 years ago, and I'd shown her the church and stuff. And he's a lovely, lovely girl. And now she found a husband, and he's really lovely. I mean, he surfs. He's great. He's just great in every way. Anyway, she's a Catholic, and she was trapped in the epicenter of horribleness. She was in Melbourne. I mean, imagine what it's like under Kim Jong.
Yeah, no, you're right. The epicenter of horribleness.
Apart from, actually, they said that even there, they congratulated themselves that they weren't Kiwis, because it would have been even worse.
It might be bad, mate, but at least we're not Kiwis.
At least we're not Kiwis. there's a tradition that they're continuing in Australia. The local, is it Tridentine Mass, the Latin Mass, one of the Catholic priests was holding secret services. And in order to get into this service where they're doing the Latin Mass, it was, you had to kind of, you approach the door and the priest would be inside peering through a hole, and they would let you in quickly and then they shut the door.
Speakeasy churches. Yeah. That's amazing.
But it gets better. So they conducted the service in a whisper, no singing or anything like that. And then when they left two by two at intervals of 30 minutes. So, I mean, they must have been queuing for quite a long time to leave. And
blimey,
they had a service the next week. And in the middle, it got busted by the police.
No.
I said, how? And they said, oh, the neighbours shocked us. Because this is the shocking thing about what's happened in Australia. And I'm sure it's the same in Kiwiland, the same in Canada. Most people are going along with it. Most people are not and not questioning the tyranny, they're acting like the lives of others, you know, like Stasi snitches. Extraordinary, isn't it?
That's appalling.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, completely believable, but still appalling and shocking. I mean, I know we read about how this went on in Nazi Germany, and we all think we're better than that. And so many of us are simply not. That's very depressing, that.
Yeah.
But I love the idea of the speakeasy church. I mean, during the lockdown, we were establishing who was going to be the speakeasy pubs, because pubs is where all the rebellion has been happening. I mean, Third Wednesday has shown that those who are going to rebuild this country are the ones secretly going to pubs when they shouldn't be, and meeting and plotting and just talking about things,
which is
finding
why
out who amongst your neighbours are the good guys. Hmm?
They don't. That's why. It's why one of the first things they did was to stop people congregating in places like pubs where people can talk.
Of course.
And
of
indeed, course, yeah. Have you heard this? This makes sense to me. That one of the reasons that they have things like jukeboxes and stuff were introduced to pubs is to stop and later on enormous screens.
Sport.
It's to stop people talking. You know, they're just down their drinks and watch.
It makes a heck of a lot of sense, but it's deeply, that sends shivers down my spine to think that would be that someone had thought about that and decided that was the thing.
We come back to this class that not only hates us but enjoys torturing us. They are endlessly inventive. I mean, imagine if you've got all the money in the world and all the power in the world, and you are a psychopath. What are you going to spend your time doing other than devising new ways of torturing the people you hate? Mm-hmm. Ordinary people. I think it's something that most people, even on our side of the argument, still have trouble grasping, because they think, well, in order for that to happen, you'd have to have, you know, you'd have to have blah, blah, blah. Yes. That's exactly it. It really is that intricate, the conspiracy.
But what they normally do is they'll say a qui bono. And really, they want to see someone gaining financial benefit from this sort of thing. And they'll say, what have they got to gain by killing us? And I think the mistake they're making is they're thinking that these are normal people like us who just are doing rather well out of our suffering. It's not the case, is it? That
these are
just
people
want,
who make
the suffering
free money.
Is the
they've been making free money. Well, I mean, the people involved with the Federal Reserve have been making free money since 1913. They haven't done anything for their money. They've just been creating money out of thin air and giving it to themselves, and then buying assets, so yeah, having the advantage over the people who would get the money later down the chain. That's how it works. And of course, they've been doing different variations on this for millennia. So they've got far more money than the people you read in the Sunday Times Rich List, which is itself a psyop, designed to give the illusion that actually, you know, oh, the richest people in the world are Carlos Slim and Bill Gates and Elon Musk currently. But they're just kind of junior league players compared to the people who've really got the money.
Yeah.
And people just don't get that. I vacillate between the two positions, you know, where I think that it can't be as intricate and complex as sometimes one thinks in one's wildly imaginative moments. But then you think about a book like Weird Scenes Inside the Canyon, you know about this book?
No, I don't. I thought you were going to say Weird Scenes Inside the Gold Mine, but that's a Doors
that's
thing.
That's what the title comes from. So Laurel Canyon. Okay. Laurel Canyon was the birthplace of the West Coast music scene that gave us many of our favourite songs. I mean, actually many of my all-time favourite songs. You know, I mean, everything from 8 Miles High to If You're Going to San Francisco to, well, I mean, iconic music. That always appears on documentaries. You know, when you see footage of a documentary about the NAM, and you see, and you see a shell-shocked 19-year-old with a 1,000-yard stare, and then it cuts to long-haired hippies at Kent State or whatever protesting against this and being gunned
white
down.
White rabbits and all that sort of stuff.
And they always, the song they always play is Buffalo Springfield's For What It's Worth, don't they? Because it's got that sort of paranoid feel, and it's also it's a great song. Anyway, I'll come to that back to that in a moment. So the thesis of the book is that the entire peace and love West Coast music scene of the mid to late 60s was a CIA psyop, and it was designed to subvert the peace movement and the anti-war movement and simultaneously to mess up the kids with drugs and to encourage promiscuity or all of which it did. And you think, yeah, well, this is a crazy thesis. And then you read the book, and the accumulated evidence is so powerful and persuasive. So all of the key figures, pretty much from that era, including Jim Morrison, were the sons of senior military personnel. These were not accidental kids who accidentally picked up a guitar and suddenly found a pop career. It was, the industry was already owned by the cabal. These people were pre-selected, which completely turns on its head your idea that one might have about how you make a career in music, because you think, well, these are gifted people, but if actually the only gift you need is to be the son of a somebody involved in the plan, it changes your understanding of it. Makes you think, well, hang on a second, maybe we're even more gulled by the system than we imagined ourselves to be. We think we're autonomous. We think we have a critical faculty which enables us to see the world as it really is. And actually, maybe not. Maybe everything we know is a psyop. But certainly, it was the case in the West Coast music scene. And to go back to Stephen Stills, the guy from Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and before that from Buffalo Springfield, author of For What It's Worth, the anti-war anthem, guess what he did before he became a pop star? I mean, a rock star.
Was he CIA or something?
Yes, he was CIA. He was, or if he wasn't CIA, he was in a lot of places the CIA were. So he was in Central America. He may well have been in Vietnam as an advisor before America moved in massively. And it's this kind of information that makes you think, well, if that is the rule for the 60s pop scene, late 60s West Coast scene, what else don't we know about? What else is a massive psyop? I mean, you know, Dick, you could be, if you want to be really crazy, you could tell me that Ukraine is a...
don't be silly now. Since Zelensky can't possibly be a wrong un.
I see, Dick, that behind you, you've got blue and yellow. Look right.
Can I just tell you a bit about the blue and the yellow?
Yeah.
They're actually my new T-shirts, which have just hot off the press. So they are available in, let's call this Ukraine blue. Yeah?
Yeah.
And we'll call this one yellow, orange. But wait for this. Best of all, I'm calling this
Zelensky
color
khaki.
Zelensky.
Zelensky khaki.
Just Zelensky.
Zelensky.
So, yeah, contact me if you want one of these fantastic things. Glad you pointed those out, but there is no yellow there. I'm at the point.
Look further behind
where
you.
When
Dick.
I'm choosing my...
Look further behind you.
Yellow? Oh, you know what that is? Hang on. People do this, don't they? They pick apart.
They so do, and it's so tiresome.
I made this for an art piece in about 1991 after a visit to New York.
Yeah, but that's predictive programming, Dick. You knew that this was coming.
Yeah, of course it. But yeah, thanks for giving a free plug to my T-shirts. That's very helpful. Hey, listen, it says our Zoom time is up soon. Is that it right?
So what I'm going to do, I'm going to give you a new Zoom code because I cannot. I'm sure that whoever's
we haven't even started to cover half the things we need to talk about.
That's okay. But I'm sure that whoever owns Zoom is evil. I don't want to give them my money. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, it'll be the first software developer that wasn't. So, yeah, I think you can assume that correctly.
And I'm going to give you a new code now. I'm going to end this bit of the conversation, and we're going to and we'll resume in a second.
And how are you going to present these? Are you going to splice them or just do them as two separate entities?
Do you know what I was thinking, Dick? I've been starting to think that maybe I'm going to give the first bit of my podcasts, you know, free as a kind of like ground bait for the Trap the Sharks, you know, chum, and then. The second
James one and Chums
is going to be for paying subscribers only. I mean, I do love all my listeners and viewers and stuff, but I kind of think it's a bit unfair. I've been giving away free stuff for a long time. I think it's a bit unfair on the supporters. They ought to get something more for their money, I think. It also might encourage people to get off their asses and support me. And I was kind of one of the Shark Kings on the Telegram channel the other day said to me, I was going to give you some money, but then my wife pointed out that you sent your son to Eton, so you can probably you don't need the money. And I was thinking, yeah, fair play. I like that remark. I mean, never mind that son was there on a bursary and stuff and I didn't have to pay very much of it. But yeah, I see your point. But at the same time, nobody, when they go out and buy a Madonna CD, goes, well, she's loaded. I'm not going to, well, obviously nobody buys a CD anymore. I was just giving an old fashioned example. Obviously nobody who wasn't a Satanist would buy a Madonna CD anyway. I mean, she's shit. But were they, as an example, or nobody goes to the movie and says, well, I'm not going to go. I was going to go to see a movie, but it's got these actors in it and they get paid loads of money. Why should I be putting money into their pocket? You're not paying for the person.
It's a good analogy.
You're paying for the product. And yeah. I think it's a bit like one of those all-you-can-eat buffets. If I just give piles of food for free, people are just going to go, yeah, and they're not going to appreciate it, are they? What do you reckon?
Right, we've got a minute. No, you're completely justified in this.
Okay, so this part's free. If you want to see the second part, seriously, once you're the second part of me and D, again, you're going to have to subscribe.
I've got a feeling it's going to be so good.
Yeah, it's going to be good. It's going to be really good as well. It's going to be brilliant. It's going to be the best Dick and James podcast ever. So there you are.